Sunday night offers a rare event featuring a Hamilton performer that, well, he's played to the applause of thousands, but a lot of Hamiltonians might not know the name of Bob Wegner. He's a big fan of the majestic sounds of more progressive rock from the likes of Max Webster, yes, and Queen. While he took to music from a very young age, it would be when that musical theater crisscrossed with his love of hard rock that Bob Wegner would spend the next couple of years playing the guitar, just like his hero, Brian May of Queen. He does a rare show featuring a wealth of musical styles that influence and inspire him, and maybe he'll even throw in a Queen song. But here's some original music from a trio he formed in his days at the Staircase doing musical theater, featuring cellist Jeff Ball and drummer Vince Waters and guitarist Bob Wegner. This is Euphonic, a taste of some of Bob Wegner's music. He's live Sunday at the Pearl Company.
Oh.
Hi, is this Bob Wegner?
Speaking, is this Dr. Rick?
This is Rick Taylor.
Oh, yes. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm hoping you have a few minutes to chat right now.
Of course.
Well, this is our first time talking, so if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind knowing the full history. You were born in Hamilton?
Born in Hamilton.
And your musical career started very early, at the age of 5 on piano. By the age of 12, you were on guitar. Were you a high school music student? I guess you continued on making music your career study-wise?
Well, there's a whole lot of things there. First of all, I commend you for doing your homework. I'm very flattered. But yes, high school music, that was actually a very, very good formative bunch of years for sure, playing in a high school band. And a lot of what you take with you comes from that for sure, because you cover so much variety of music, and that definitely leaves a bit of a trail, you know, and you want to kind of incorporate into what you do.
Which high school did you go to?
Sherwood Secondary.
Sherwood. And are you still a Hamilton resident now?
Yeah, I am. I haven't always been, but I am right now.
Well, yeah, your musical activities definitely have taken you other places, so to speak. So were you always what we call perhaps a prodigy on a guitar?
Well, not from the womb, but, you know, shortly thereafter. to tell you the absolute truth, I don't know. I don't even know if I would use that characterization. I mean, because we're always learning and always trying to get better. I think I was probably 16 when I realized that, yeah, there was something going on here and that I should actually probably pursue this in some kind of proper way. And that didn't really happen properly until I, let's call it spade a spade, when the day I dropped out of school was the day I started to learn about life and also really take the music thing seriously. And then I was 23 when I got my first big gig in Toronto.
Well, yeah, so you dropped out of school?
Yeah, unfortunately. Or maybe it dropped me. I don't know. We continue to have that debate, and we can't come to a consensus.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of rock music in general, so I love reading biographies, and most of the stars of rock didn't enjoy traditional schooling, although Queen would be an example against that.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
So when did you drop out of school?
I would have been, I'd say I was 21. I was studying software engineering, which would actually be a surprise to a lot of people, because it seems to be on the kind of the opposite end of the artistic branch. But it really worked its wonders, because a lot of the stuff I learned in web design came in very handy for, you know, promoting yourself online. And I have my own website, and I've designed websites for other people professionally. So that's actually really come in handy.
Well, right then. So you did graduate high school.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And it made it about a year and a half of college.
And, well, most bands or most musicians end up doing rock bands once they start getting into the guitar. Did you do that in Hamilton?
Mm. Kind of, yeah, you're right. That kind of is a first step. I played in a couple of bands. I did the local club scene a bit. But I didn't really get my feet wet until I ended up doing the Queen musical, We Will Rock You, in Toronto. And I kind of jumped a few steps in doing that because I didn't do the whole slogging the bars and driving 5,000 miles to get ripped off by some shitty promoter in North Tonawanda. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
So that stuff kind of came later. I didn't do a lot of that either, but I've always had a history of not doing things in the right order. Things just kind of happen as they do, and then you kind of panic on the inside when you're throwing a new thing. And you just don't show anyone on the outside, and you saw it before you show it, right?
Well, yeah, that's so the history then doesn't include indie rock bands or honing your craft on a stage. You learned the guitar. You did it well, and then somehow, somewhere, you get to hang out with Dr. Brian May. So what was the original story of how did you get involved in that?
Well, first of all, I will say I did play in public for sure. I mean, I did the open mics at the Staircase Theater. I met a wonderful cellist named Jeff Ball. We eventually formed a trio with a drummer named Vince Waters, and we've done some interesting things too. We're called Euphonics. So I did have performance experience for sure. I did some musical theater as well. So it's not like I was completely thrown into the deep end. But to answer your question, that is a very long story. Depends how long you have. Basically, what happened was I sent Brian May an email through his website, brianmay.com. Anyone could have done it. And I didn't attach an MP3 of myself playing or any kind of a clip, which might have impressed him, I suppose. But it was because the We Will Rock You musical was going to be playing in Las Vegas. And this is back in 2004. So I was 21. And he responded the next day. And being the big Queen fan that I was, of course, the first time you hear from someone like that, it's a pretty big deal. So at the end of the day, I didn't end up doing the audition in Las Vegas. I had a theater show I was doing here, actually. And it turned out to make the right decision because it was actually an open audition and literally anyone could have come in. And the guy who ended up getting the gig was Paul Crook, who's now with Meatloaf, so I mean, he would have eaten me for breakfast anyway. But he's a lovely guy, by the way, so I'm so glad the right guy got the job down there. But then I went and emailed Brian May and I asked him, is there any plan for the show to come to Toronto or somewhere else in North America, maybe New York, or like do a Broadway run? And he said, yeah, actually, the next one we're planning on doing is in Toronto. So I said, great, I'll keep my eyes open, and that was that. Then it hit the news in October 2006, it would have been, that it was coming to Toronto, the show, We Will Rock You. So I got back in touch with the doc, and I call him that because he is a doctor. And he likes that too. Saying that it was going to be playing in Toronto, so I got back in touch with him, and I said, can we follow through with that audition for this version now? And he said, sure, I'll get you in the system, and he got me with all the right people. I did the first audition, passed, and the second audition was a week later at a Cherry Beach studio in Toronto, and there was a doc with Roger Taylor as well, and they auditioned us, and long story short, I got the job. Meeting him for the first time was obviously ridiculously exciting, and it was for everyone, but of course in that situation you don't show that because you're there to go for a job, and that just happens to be the adjudicator. It's not some guy in Toronto, it's guys from one of the biggest bands of all time. So you keep your cool and you just do your job and you make sure that there's no alternative but you. And luckily that worked out. So I did that show for a couple years and then a few years later I ended up doing it again on the U.S. tour. And that was basically last year. I was on the road for a year in about, I don't know, 25, 30 different cities. Playing the show once again. So there we have it.
Well, yeah, so that would be life as I talk to musicians all the time, and so many musicians would like to be able to make their living as a musician. So you being able to do that, I guess the reason why we are looking at your early history is you know, everybody usually wants to be a rock god or the pop superstar or whatnot. You had a history then in theater as well. Were you a fan of Queen before this all started?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Queen is, I'd say, my absolute favorite band of all time, with Yes being a very close second, along with Max Webster. But for sure, yeah, Queen was the number one. So it was definitely a big deal to meet Brian and kind of have his seal of approval. And to actually still be in correspondence with him. He really is a lovely man.
Well, yeah, Brian May, again, in the rock milieu, probably one of the top 10 or 20 guitarists ever of all time. He was, from the little I know, the scant fandom I've offered for Queen, I know that he built the guitar that he pretty much always has played out of an old fireplace. Him and his father built it.
That's right, yeah.
And he's... The sound of Brian May from the first Queen album, he was able to do three-part harmony. There's always something majestic and regal about what he did musically. So perhaps that was an influence on your guitar playing from the start.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I was never particularly cool, and I'm not sure if I am, but I certainly wasn't when I was in school because I wasn't listening to music that was in or popular at the time. And back then, that kind of was a big deal. I mean, the 70s, if you grew up then, it was either you were a Kiss fan or you listened to folk music. And these things had their lines were rigidly drawn, and that was the Mason-Dixon line. Either you were into this or you were into that. But these days, the kids know everything because the music is so accessible on YouTube and all. So, but back then, yeah, that is what it was. I listened to this stuff, and it was a huge, tremendous influence on me. And I learned so much about arrangement from listening to May's distinct sense of harmony and Mercury's as well. They definitely approach these things in two very different ways. But the orchestra of guitars, it's an absolutely beautiful sound when you do that in the studio. And probably the best example of that is on Good Company from The Night at the Opera, because what he does is he creates a jazz band of guitars, like a Dixieland type thing, and there's a trumpet, a trombone, and a clarinet. And I've played with classic albums live, and we've done The Night at the Opera album note for note, so we had to actually put that together. And they sent the clip of us doing it to Brian, and he said, wow, no one's ever done that properly before. So I think he liked it. So that's really nice.
Well, yes, out of all of the, excuse me, out of all of this, then Bob Wagner gets to be a buddy of Brian May. And that alone is probably one cool thing to be living.
Well, that's the thing. It's just one thing. And it's funny. After a while, I guess I kind of got typecast as getting all the Queen-related jobs. But then someone once put it well. They said, no, look at it as you have a monopoly on them. I'm thinking, well, that is a much more positive way of looking at it. But that said, as much as I love to do that, and if there is a typecast, I guess in a way you want to break it and demonstrate that you can do other things, which is what brings me to why in the world I'm decided to do a one-man show, 98% of which is not going to be rock music. So,
well, yeah, again, you're doing things against the grain where kids grow up and they want to start their own band. Maybe they do a cover band and maybe somebody wants to sing their own songs. And usually it's in a rock or pop or folk thing where you're trying to connect with an audience. You're offering a different thing, as you say, with your solo venture.
Well, that's just it, yeah. I mean, I never really went out of my way to go against the grain. I mean, maybe that's a bit of a misconception about me, but it's just I do whatever has felt right or natural at the time. And I just feel like picking up a classical guitar and playing Bach. I just feel like, learning how to play Beatles standards in a Chet Atkins-type way. I enjoy playing Indian classical music and making the guitar sound like a sitar. And there's so many things you can do with the instrument, and you especially learn that when you listen to people who don't play your instrument. If you listen to Miles Davis for 6 months intently and try to put those things on any instrument that is not a trumpet, you will learn so much about your instrument.
well, yeah, so... what we might call musos would definitely be interested in what you're doing. The people that are into the guitar and guitar playing, you would be showcasing something great for them.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I also plan on having some production, because, I mean, the original concept was, let's just play for 90 minutes, and then it became, let's play for, 70, 75 minutes, and then tell some stories between songs, and then I thought, no, it still needs to be more inclusive of the audience. It's like in conversation, you don't want to talk at people, you like to talk with people, and actually engage, and make it kind of a two-way dialogue, where each is giving and receiving, and, So what I'm going to do is, long story short, as soon as I learned that the Pearl Company has a video screen and a projector, all the lights went off in my head, and suddenly there's going to be a few tunes where I'm going to definitely have some kind of production, video, audio, pictures, whatever it may be. Of course, I'm not going to give them away now. You got to come to the show and find out what in the world I'm up to. But I seem to think it makes sense, so I hope people who come will as well.
Well, yeah, so as you say, it's a production. It's not just you and a guitar. It's not just you, the proverbial Spinal Tap kind of joke. You just get up there with a guitar and quote-unquote solo for an hour, and everyone should just be in awe of the guitar god. But you are, as you say, engaging the audience.
Well, that's just it, yeah, because honestly, I'm a guitar player. I am the target audience for guitar players who do guitar shows. And I cannot count how many of these shows I've been to where after 10 minutes I'm thinking, wow, you're fantastic, you got great chops, I love what you're doing. What else can you do? And they don't have an answer for the next 80 minutes. And just as a viewer, as a guitar player, I love it. I love watching and I can gather notes. And I can think, great, I love what these guys do, and they're phenomenal musicians, and I bet you most of them play circles around me, and that's something to strive to get better. It's always like in life, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And likewise with being a musician, if you think that you are better than everyone else, well, then you just haven't seen enough people. Because if you look on YouTube, you will find an 8-year-old Asian girl who will play guitar way better than I ever will. So, so at the end of the day, what you want to do is you just want to find what works for you, and you want to try to be as inclusive of people as you possibly can be. And so I don't just want to play for guitar players. Of course, I want them to show up, but I want to find a way to connect with people so they can somehow feel that, the way I would use the guitar to express myself, that maybe others can see some sense of expression in themselves that they can share with others, and make this kind of a mutual dialogue, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking how an 8-year-old Asian girl plays better than Bob Wagner might be a title of sorts.
Yeah, let's make that the title of the autobiography one day.
Wow. I mean, you're just stating facts again, and that's where we are in 2015. The world is different than when Brian May started making music back in 1969 or 70, so...
Well, that's just it, but that's ultimately a good thing, I think. I had a discussion with a friend recently about the fact that there are no classic albums anymore, per se, because there's just so much music. And, I mean, many will argue that in the last 20, 25 years, the only absolutely superb album to come out that will stand up for the test of time against things like Sgt. Pepper, Revolver, Are You Experienced, and any of the great albums, that the only one would be OK Computer by Radiohead. I disagree with that, but I can see where they're coming from, because in the plurality of the availability of music, that the one great album has been, I guess, replaced with a diversity of albums that we can consume so much more of. And I think ultimately we're not rich or poor, we're just differently enriched. Because there's so much more that we can have, and I think it makes us better rounded musicians and people when there's more that we can access,
Indeed. Talking with Bob Wagner, performing live at the Pearl Company on February 22nd, 7 p.m. Sunday. Tickets in advance are $15, $20 at the door. To learn more about Bob Wagner, check out bobwagner.ca. So you currently... are still involved with the classic album Vive, and as well a Genesis tribute, Genesis to Revelation.
That's right, yeah. Oh, I'm so impressed. You've done your homework. Yeah, I'm actually playing with the Genesis band at Casbah on March 8th. Plug. And that will be a whole other kind of fantastic. Those guys are supremely good musicians, and we can rehearse. We put in Watcher of the Skies literally after running it twice at rehearsal, and these guys are absolutely unbelievably good. So if anyone likes Genesis, they'll come out to that, and you'll absolutely have a great time with the old Genesis stuff.
And Euphonic that you do with Jeff Ball and Vince Waters, is there a discography? Is that an ongoing entity for you?
We have recorded the record, and I am definitely going to have that one out this year. We're going to, I should say we, not I. We just have to get it mixed and pressed and out there. But yeah, we've recorded. We've got a solid hour or so of compositions, just a guitar, cello, and drums. Anything from folk to classically influenced jazz, bit of Latino, flamenco, Mediterranean type thing, ragtime, whatever it may be. We have, for instance, one piece that starts as an Irish jig, becomes a klezmer dance, then a tango with a mambo rhythm, and then reprises the jig again at the end in a different key. And we try to make instrumental music accessible in that sense that the Jeff Ball's folk influence, he creates wonderful melodies to really go with anything. And I guess we're kind of trying to be a reaction to the idea that instrumental music should be musical wallpaper that is just tolerated in the background, as opposed to something that is actually engaging that people can connect with and listen to. And we found that when we play in the right spot, that definitely happens. So here's some more of that, I hope.
And, yeah, so frightfully busy with a variety of projects. Is the We Will Rock You thing going to be something in your future again?
It is, yeah. I got onto the cruise ship gig. It's in the Mediterranean, actually. I'm starting in April, so I'll be gone for 6 months. And that'll be a whole different thing, because when you're on a cruise ship, you're not just doing one thing. You're always doing a number of things. And I didn't even ask for it. They came to me with it. And Brian was actually clamoring at them to make sure I was on the job. So, bless him. I wasn't even sure if I was going to be wanting to do it. I knew it was happening, but as soon as I found out he wanted me on it, so I thought, yeah, I definitely would love to do it, because to go to Europe for 6 months and play music you love, yeah, sign me up. I'm in.
Will we ever see, you're also a member on the faculty of the Hamilton Conservatory for the Arts. You still teach and teach privately even, but for your one-man show, we're focusing on Bob Wegner and what you're doing musically. Will you ever release a solo recording, a solo album even?
I'd love to, yeah, because there are a couple of original pieces I'll be playing at it. It's largely going to be music that's played by others and written by others, so it's going to be a celebration, I guess, of music that's really not only left a mark on me, but music that people love. There's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be known and accessible. But for an actual album, yeah, I'd love to, because I've written a few pieces, some instrumental, some vocal, and for sure, that's on the radar. We're looking at 2016 for that, I'm thinking, because I'm going to be on the road for most of this year. But absolutely, I'd love to be able to hold a thing in my hands that has my face on it, that people might be interested in. That's a dream, isn't it?
One-man show again, Sunday, February 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Pearl Company. Advance tickets, $15.20 at the door, bobwegner.ca. So what's the craziest thing we should know about Brian May then, since you have this pipeline to him now?
Oh, the craziest thing about him? I would say that it's nothing related to music. It is the fact that he is extremely well-educated. He's a Ph.D. in astrophysics. And actually, last year, I was at an astronomy conference in the Canary Islands, and he did the most beautiful seminar alongside guys like Richard Dawkins and Stephen Hawking. He stood up at the same level as them. And what he does with astronomy, one of the things he does is it's called stereophotography. Stereoscopy was Victorian photography back in the 1860s to about maybe early 20th century, until it faded away with other things taking place. But what it was, you take two photos of the same thing from two slightly different angles, and you marry them together, and it pops out in 3D. So that's how people actually viewed photographs in Victorian England in the 1850s, rather. But that same technique is actually used in the study of astronomy. It's called parallax, when you can be on opposite sides of the Earth, potentially, taking a photo of something extremely far away, as far as hundreds of millions or even billions of light years away, and being able to measure its distance from the Earth. So he marries science and art together. He has his own photos of planets and stars and meteorites and comets that he would take, some of which were actually sent to him by Chris Hadfield when he was out at the International Space Station. And he would Photoshop, and he even told during his seminar, oh, this one took 4 days for me to Photoshop. And people gave him a standing ovation because the amount of dedication that he put into this. So that's really where his heart largely is now, is in astronomy. And the way that he could combine science and art like that was such a beautiful thing. And when I found out that he barely slept the night before because he was up till 5:30 perfecting his presentation, that didn't surprise me in the least. So if there's one thing about him, yeah, it's that he's incredibly dedicated to anything that he does, and it's so much more than music. And he's even going to be running for, the rumor is that he's going to be running for a member of parliament to be an independent in the UK in the next election. Wow. So he's definitely spreading himself around in so many ways, and he's extremely dedicated to whatever he does. So good on him. So, you know, let that be an example to anyone who's listening that it is not only so wrong to think it's only possible to do one thing, but it's possible for anyone to do as much as they want to do, and people like him show it.
What's the craziest thing about Bob Wagner, then?
Craziest thing about me? Oh, dear.
That you're willing to share.
That's even worse. That's a harder question. Ask me a little more specifically, some branch of life, musically or non-musically.
Well, are you going to play some Queen then for your one-man show on Sunday, February 22nd?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to play one Brian May piece, yeah. Because I definitely want to do a lot of other things. But there's one piece that I absolutely love that I'm going to do. And, yeah, for sure I have to do something like that.
Well, what if there are people screaming, play Stone Cold Crazy?
I need a band for that. That's difficult to do, but there is one tune that I have a backing track to that actually Brian released to the public, which is wonderful. So I can actually, as a guitar player, play along with this piece. And there'll be a few frills, and it's a production to go along with that. But I do want to answer your question though about the weirdest thing about me. There's nothing really weird about me. Per se, it's a very difficult question. As you can see, it's way easier to answer that question about somebody else, because when you're observing, it's easier to observe others than yourself at times. So that's a really, really hard one to answer. And I'm feeling tempted to give some kind of a stock answer. Oh, I love to travel. Oh, I love long walks on the beach. Oh, I'm addicted to cereal. But it's very hard to give an answer to that question with substance, because you don't spend as much time, I guess, evaluating yourself as much as you looking at what others are doing, and maybe that's something wrong with us, because we should be spending more time on our self-work, I suppose. When did this become a philosophy course?
I don't know.
But it's a wonderful question to ask, and that's the kind of thing I'd have to think of an answer to, and I'm sure there is a good one, but it's hard to come up with it off the cuff, you know?
Well, maybe when you're back from your Mediterranean jaunt and you're more focused again on releasing your own solo album or something, we should talk again.
Yeah, I'd love to, and by then maybe I will have a better answer to that and a few more stories to tell.
Indeed. Otherwise, we'll check you out Sunday, February 22nd. I do appreciate your time, though, Bob Wagner. Great to catch up with you, and I look forward to talking again in the future.
Oh, wonderful, and thank you so much for taking the time to call. I appreciate it, and I actually enjoy expressing myself, so thanks for providing a platform to do that.
My pleasure, Bob.
That's wonderful.
And we will talk again. Best of luck, sir.
Likewise, and thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye.
That is Bob Wagner.